From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon,
Tony. Is our host.
And welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, major developments in Israel today as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu signed an agreement with his chief political rival, Benny Gantz, to form an emergency government. How significant of a development is this, and what does this mean for Israel's right-of-center government going forward? CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell joins us from Jerusalem later here on Washington Watch. This weekend marked the 25th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing that took the lives of 168 people. It was the deadliest act of domestic terrorism on U.S. soil. Is the risk, is the U.S. rather, at risk for more domestic terrorism? Oklahoma Senator James Lankford joins us in just a moment. We will also get an update on the stalemate between Republicans and Democrats over providing additional funds for the Paycheck Protection Program that is designed to stem the rising ranks of the unemployed.
At this hour, our Democratic colleagues are still prolonging their discussions with the administration, so the Senate regretfully will not be able to pass more funding for Americans' paychecks today.
That was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor earlier today. Will an agreement be reached? Well, we'll talk about that as well. Also, a federal civil rights lawsuit has been filed in North Carolina in the arrest of David Benham, who was counseling, as you know, if you listened to the program when he was on here. He was counseling outside a Charlotte abortion clinic. ADF President and CEO Mike Ferris is here with the details of that civil rights suit. And finally, a Harvard law professor in Harvard Magazine claims homeschooling is a threat to children's rights. Her remedy? We'll get the answer from Mike Donnelly, senior counsel for Homeschool Legal Defense Association, later here on Washington Watch. Also, I'll discuss the benefits of homeschooling and why the left despises it so much with FRC's Kathy Roos later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And let me remind you, if you've not yet downloaded the new Stand Firm app, you could do so by going to the App Store or going to TonyPerkins.com. The benefits of having the Stand Firm app is that you can listen to Washington Watch. In fact, it'll alert you to the start of Washington Watch every day, Monday through Friday, no matter where you are in the world. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. Also, it will help you stay informed with what's happening in government and give you the tools necessary to be a part of this great republic of ours. It requires that you be a participant, and we want to help you do that. So download the Stand Firm app. All right, yesterday marked the 25th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, where 168 people lost their lives. We're going to look at that anniversary, as well as take a look at a Senate task force designed to combat anti-Semitism, which is on the rise here in the United States and around the world, and its connection to domestic terrorism. Also get an update on the Paycheck Protection Program that is out of money. Joining me now to talk about all of this and more is Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always a privilege to be with you, Tony.
Senator, I know you were a part of the event yesterday. It was not held live as it normally is. In fact, Kerry Watkins, who runs the memorial, who I graduated from high school with, you know, lamented the fact that it had to be done kind of in a virtual setting. But you made remarks in that, and it was a very touching event. This is and the governor, or the mayor, rather, of Oklahoma City, I thought made a very significant point that at this 25-year mark, we go from being an event that we're a part of to one that becomes a part of history, and it's important that we continue to remind people what's behind it.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that I try to be able to push as well is that the history needs to be retold, because those who have lived it and remember it well need to be able to pass it on to a generation. Half of the people in the state of Oklahoma either were not in Oklahoma or were not alive at the time of 1995, just 25 years ago, and they do not know the story of a person who was angry at the government that got a Ryder truck, loaded it full of fertilizer and diesel fuel, pulled it up in front of a federal building, parked it directly in front of the child care center at the front door at the ground level, and drove away and allowed that Ryder truck to blow up and kill 168 people. It is the horrible act that is unexplainable still to this day. He didn't know anyone in the building. He was just mad at the government and just angry in general and decided to kill children and people that worked for the federal government that day. It could have been in any federal building in the entire country. It happened to be the one in Oklahoma City. And our response to it as a community was dramatic. And the term Oklahoma Standard that you still hear people talk about still today was set that day and that in the weeks of following and how we served each other. But it is a stark reminder when we allow our hatred and anger to be able to grow to a level that you just lash out irrationally. This can really become an issue for a generation.
Well, it can, and I think it's, you know, you talk about it being Oklahoma that was targeted. You know, having grown up in Oklahoma myself, I understand that these are people who are very friendly. It is one of the reddest, if not the reddest state in the nation. And so they did respond in a way. This was, you know, pre-9/11, and they did kind of set the standard for how Americans respond. But shocked by the fact that they were the target of this act of domestic terrorism. And that shock really continues even to this day in some ways.
It does, yeah. 25 years later, we still pause. I really do believe in Oklahoma there will never be an April 19th that we don't pause in some way as a state. And then many people across the country just pause to be able to remember and think about that day when 168 lives were senselessly lost. But it's also a day that we continue to be able to serve. We remember, we honor the families, we honor law enforcement and EMS and firefighters and so many folks that came running. Just total strangers ran to the scene to be able to help and stayed. And what is a single event that people look at April 19th, those of us in Oklahoma remember well, it was months and months and months of going through the debris and identifying bodies and notifying families and walking through the journey. It seemed to be an endless process. But now we gather people to remember, and the Memorial Museum is all about dealing with domestic terrorism, dealing with international terrorism, dealing with communication and what happens when we have rising hatred and how do we engage, whether it's anti-Semitism or racism or hatred against government, but how do we engage in such a way that we make sure this never happens again?
A great question. And I go back to, I made reference to the Oklahoma City Mayor David Holt and his comments leading up to the 25th anniversary when he said it marked a transition of the event from one of personal experience to one of historical significance. And I think that's an important point. As you talked about, half the population was not there 25 years ago. We've got to educate, inform. This is why history is so important. And you made reference to anti-Semitism. You co-chair that task force in the Senate. This is an issue that, left unaddressed, we could see something repeat itself that we saw back in Germany in the early 1940s and 30s. And it's not just here in the United States, but it's global. But we need to be a leader in addressing it.
Yeah, we do. And this is this particular week is a week of remembering the Holocaust worldwide. And so it's a significant time period to be even talk about this as well. Senator Jackie Rosen and I, we co-chair that anti-Semitism task force. And the focus for us is it's not about a certain faith. It's not about a certain race. It's not about a certain background. But we understand what has often happened to Jews first has then moved to other parts of society, where parts of society begin to prey on, pick on, push on for Jews, and then they begin to then separate out to other individuals in society, as happened in Germany in the 1930s and 40s, and then accelerated through the whole region. So standing up for what's right and standing up for human dignity and the ability to be able to disagree and to say our families don't have to live the same or be the same, but we should be able to honor each other and to be able to have significant differences and talk about our differences without having to be able to isolate and dehumanize anyone. And anti-Semitism at its core dehumanizes people. And we see it rising in odd ways. This whole anti-Zionism movement to say that Israel shouldn't really be a Jewish nation, they should not be a nation founded around Judaism, is really a creeping type of anti-Semitism that's creeping in to be able to say those people with that faith and that place. And so we're trying to be able to speak out in as many ways as we can.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Monday. My guest in this first segment, Oklahoma Senator James Lankford, talking about the 25th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, but transitioning to anti-Semitism. And, Senator, I just want to put a fine point on this, because recently the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which I presently chair, we hosted a hearing on this very issue, because some would say, oh, this is just a political issue, people just trying to make something out of it. No, there is quantifiable evidence to show that this is a growing problem once again globally, but it's here in the United States as well. In fact, we had the UN rapporteur on anti-Semitism pointing out that the reason we need to be concerned with this, as you alluded to earlier, it's the canary in the coal mine. If we allow this to occur with a particular faith, in particular, history has shown us when Jews are attacked, it's not long after that we see other faiths attacked as well.
Right. And each individual should be a person that's protected and honored in their faith to be able to live out their faith. This is a basic American principle that we believe in, this freedom of religion. It's not only the freedom to be able to have a faith, is to be able to live your faith or change your faith or to have no faith at all as an American. And so when we stand up for all faiths to be able to have that basic dignity in the United States, and we stand up for that right for people worldwide, we're standing up for what we believe is a basic human right that God has given us the ability to be able to choose. And so we want to be able to help protect that. So no government can force people to say, you have to be a certain faith, or you can't be a certain faith, or you can't change your faith. We believe under God that we have the ability to be able to have that choice, and we should wisely make that choice.
Senator, before we run out of time, I want to transition to yet another topic. It's one that you were very much involved in as the Senate hammered out initially the details of the CARES Act, which was the third phase of the response to the coronavirus, which included the Paycheck Protection Program. That's essentially trying to keep people employed and off of the unemployment rolls. You worked very hard to make sure that faith-based organizations, churches, were included in that. It's now out of money. Are we close to seeing a deal reached to where more funds will go into this program?
We are close, I believe. This has been something that's been frustrating, because we overwhelmingly passed the Paycheck Protection Program for faith-based nonprofits, and businesses that are small businesses across the country to be able to have 8 weeks of support, to, as you mentioned before, to keep people off the unemployment rolls, because our unemployment system is not sophisticated enough to be able to handle millions and millions of people all coming into it. And the best thing that we can do is help people stay connected to their current jobs rather than end up on unemployment and to go through that system. A week and a half ago, now almost 2 weeks ago, Republicans tried to be able to straight extend that. We were denied. And then again on the next week, twice, that was last week, we were denied both times when we brought it up. Tried to bring it up again today. We were once again denied. We're now close to a deal to try to be able to get it done tomorrow. The main goal that we have is we should allow small businesses to continue to thrive even during this time period and keep people employed. Yeah. So we're close. Hopefully it's tomorrow.
All right. Senator James Lankford, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be watching tomorrow again. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch. ADF's Mike Ferris is here next. Don't go away. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast, so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast, called Lecture Me, was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. The website to find out more information is tonyperkins.com. A federal court in Kansas has issued a temporary restraining order against Kansas Governor Laura Kelly's ban on church gatherings of 10 or more. And a federal civil rights lawsuit has been filed on behalf of David Benham, who was arrested for counseling outside a Charlotte abortion clinic. Joining me now to talk about all this, President, CEO, and General Counsel of Alliance Defending Freedom, Mike Ferris. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you again.
So some victories here. Of course, this is, in my view, some of these leaders were so far out of bounds in targeting religious activities that it wasn't too difficult to convince judges to act on this. But you did have success in Kansas like you did elsewhere last week. So talk about this decision in Kansas.
Well, the Kansas decision was a really remarkably well-written opinion that pointed out the basic theme that we were able to bring forward. Religious people are being treated in an unequal fashion. She noted that the governor's orders declared religious observation as an essential service, but it was the only essential activity that was totally banned under her order, and that the rules on groups congregating and spending extended time in the same vicinity were riddled with dozens of exceptions, but churches were uniquely singled out for unfavorable treatment. And so it's the disparity, it's the singling out people of faith. That's the key problem that we're litigating on and having some success at right now.
Yeah, and that's the, I want to draw a very, very clear line under that. That, look, we're not asking that there be exemptions given to religious organizations. They are recognized, according to the federal government, as essential services provided by the clergy and churches, but they should not be singled out for treatment that would hinder them in functioning what they're called to do in a way that is more difficult than others. And that's what you're zeroing in on. It's like the thing in Mississippi we talked about last week, the churches in Mississippi, the governor, or the mayor, rather, of Greenville, saying you can't sit in your car at a church for a drive-in service, but you can sit in your car at Sonic.
Exactly, yeah. And so these problems persist, and we're to keep after them. But it's really gratifying to see that the courts are understanding this. But, you know, the challenges that come to the idea of, you know, big churches meeting in person when they're being treated equally, we're not raising those kind of challenges because, you know, that's a different situation entirely. We're looking for equal treatment and common
right.
sense. When either of those things are violated, then we'll come to take them to task.
Right. We've been saying all along, look, we support the CDC guidelines. We want to keep the community safe. And so as long as everybody plays by the same rules, we're good with that. We'll adapt. We'll think and act outside the box. But if they're going to single out churches to only apply the restriction to them, then we have a problem. And that's why I'm so grateful for ADF. Another case in point, not a church, but a nonprofit doing work in what they were created to do, provide counseling and assistance outside of abortion clinics in Charlotte, North Carolina. Our friend David Benham arrested for doing that in violation of the stay-at-home orders while the clinic was operating. You've now filed suit, a civil rights suit, on his behalf. Tell us about it.
Well, again, it's the same premise. Other people can walk up and down the same sidewalks, no problem. You can walk other places, but you can't walk and pray at the same time, or you can't walk and talk. And so if the physical – they were – fully compliant with the 6-foot rule. They were compliant with all the other rules that apply to other people on those same sidewalks. The only thing that changed is their purpose for being there. And that's not a constitutionally valid reason for making a distinction. And so, again, they're singling out people of faith, people who are there because their religious faith compels them to go try to save these babies. And so if it's lawful to be on the sidewalk for any purpose, it's lawful to be on that sidewalk for the purposes that they were there.
And again, let me point out, they were abiding by all of the social distancing guidelines, and so they were doing everything according to the rules. It was just the fact that it appears that it was the purpose for which they were there that the city did not like.
That's exactly right. And we've, you know, been working with the city attorneys to try to get them to relent. But, you know, and they understand that this is aimed at the purpose. And so any pretense that this is even-handed is very thin, and it will not, I believe it will not, you know, last over time. And as we get down to it and get to the judges making a decision on similar requests for temporary orders, I'm hoping for and expect success.
What's the time frame that you expect something to take place in that case?
Well, predicting time frames in the COVID-19 context are uncharted territory. But normally speaking, a couple, 3 days.
Yeah.
But whether that's changed in this context, that's hard to say.
Well, Mike Farris does underscore once again the importance of the federal judiciary and what the Trump administration has done in putting constitutionalists onto the court that recognize this fundamental freedom of speech and religion. This is so important going forward.
Indeed. And it also underscores the importance. The Justice Department has filed statements of interest, which are a way of officially putting the federal courts on notice that they are taking a position in the case and are urging a particular outcome. And in two of our cases involving churches, the Justice Department has intervened saying, religious freedom is important, and it's being violated here in this case by these local actors in local government. So we really appreciate the Trump administration and General Barr in particular for their courageous stand on that.
We do, and we appreciate ADF for being out there representing people of faith all across this country. So, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today, and thanks for the great work you guys do.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. You know, all of this, the Justice Department, judges, it's the result of elections. It's why we need to be informed, registered, and voting. Speaking of elections, coming up next, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his chief political rival, Benny Gantz, have reached an agreement for a power-sharing deal. CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief Chris Mitchell is here next. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include: to abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human. Why does the abortion industry hate women? China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities, and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Glad you are with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, be sure, if you have not yet downloaded the new Stand Firm app, it's the new and improved Stand Firm app. It stands even firmer. So go to the App Store and get the Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over. Not only can you listen to Washington Watch wherever you go, but you can also be connected to get legislative alerts so you know who to contact about what, when, and we give you all the information you need. So go to the App Store and get the Stand Firm app. All right, earlier today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his chief rival Benny Gantz of the Blue and White Party signed an agreement to form an emergency government. Now, after months of political paralysis, this deal avoided a fourth consecutive election in just over a year. The question is, where will this put Israel's right-of-center government going forward? Joining me now with answers is CBN's Joining me with answers is CBN's Middle East Bureau Chief, Chris Mitchell from Jerusalem. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
So this is breaking news, this agreement. I know we talked about a couple weeks ago that there were discussions taking place, but people weren't certain if it was going to happen. But it has now happened. They've signed an agreement. What does the agreement say?
Well, a couple of things the agreement says, Tony, is that they're going to share power. Benny Gantz will initially become the defense minister. Prime Minister Netanyahu will continue in that office for the next 18 months, and then Benny Gantz will become the prime minister. The agreement lasts for 36 months, and half of it will be Netanyahu as prime minister, half of it Benny Gantz. And then they're sharing power in various different offices and ministries like the foreign ministry and such. But so far, it looks like the details have been coming out, but hopefully it'll be a stable government for the next 3 years.
So, Chris Mitchell, you know, for decades, Israel under Benjamin Netanyahu have had a right of center government. Where does that leave the government of Israel now?
Well, it's a great question. There is one political party called Yamina, which is Hebrew for right. They might actually not come into the government because they feel some of the agreements or concessions that Netanyahu has had made to Benny Gantz is not something they want to serve in the government. One major point for right-wing supporters will be the fact that they will vote on annexation of parts of Judea and Samaria, also known as the West Bank, sometime in July. And that has been a major contention for many of the right-wing parties here and supporters, that they would be taking advantage of the Trump peace plan that really does give Israel the sort of a green light, at least to vote on that annexation of parts of Judea and Samaria, as well as the Jordan Valley.
Where does this leave in terms of military service for the ultra-Orthodox, which has been a political issue there for some time?
Well, that's a good point, because that had been really a sticking point for some of the political paralysis. The point is that for the ultra-Orthodox, and this was a concession that they were able to get, is that the government will set quotas for the ultra-Orthodox, not the Knesset, which means probably they won't have the government will have concessions, I think, that will be agreeable to the ultra-Orthodox community. So that was a concession for them. And one of the, as I said, well, you know, that's one of the major sticking points here in Israeli politics.
So, Chris Mitchell, the backdrop here, the coronavirus, is that what was really driving the coming together of these two political rivals to form this emergency government?
Yeah, exactly, Tony. I think that was the thing that was overshadowing. And I think Israelis really didn't want three elections, and they certainly didn't want four in light of all the suffering that they're going through. Just like the U.S., Israel has been on lockdown for several weeks. There was a bit of loosening of those restrictions today. But Israelis were very frustrated with their political leaders that were unable, at least till today, to come up with some sort of a national emergency government. And actually one of the points, Tony, to be made is that the government is agreeing for the next 6 months there will be no major legislation. The only thing they'll be focusing on is specifically the coronavirus.
Chris Mitchell, I know it's early. The details are still not out, but what is the initial reaction from the public there in Jerusalem to this agreement?
Well, I think initially would be one of relief that finally their political leaders have come together and formed this national emergency government in light of the fact that Israel, like most nations around the world, is in a national emergency. I would think, say, it's kind of poignant as well, Tony, that actually today is Holocaust Remembrance Day here in Israel. It just began a few hours ago, and they will commemorate the Holocaust for the next 20 hours or so. And next week will be Israel's Independence Day. So it's a very important part of the Jewish calendar, the Hebrew calendar, and the Israeli calendar here to have this unity government finally come together.
All right. Chris Mitchell, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us live from Israel this late at night. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, Chris Mitchell with CBN. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. But don't go away, because we're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. So glad you are with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you at the website. All right, Harvard is scheduled to host a homeschooling summit in June. The summit is designed to bring together experts from across the educational spectrum, or some spectrum, to discuss the, quote, problems of educational deprivation and child maltreatment that too often occurs under the guise of homeschooling in a legal environment of minimal or no oversight, end quote. Well, in an effort to set the stage, apparently, a professor of law and director of Harvard's Law School's Child Advocacy Legal Clinic has an essay in Harvard Magazine, where, among other things, she claims homeschooling is a threat to children's rights. Joining me now is Mike Donnelly, Senior Counsel for Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you again.
Attacks on homeschooling are nothing new, but it looks like it's being ratcheted up again. I think Professor Elizabeth Barthollet puts this essay in the Harvard Magazine. The timing of it's kind of interesting, with a lot of children across America now at school being homeschooled. At least they're being, I guess it's a stretch to say they're being homeschooled. They're doing their work at home from school. But two things are happening. One, parents may find that this is not such a bad thing. And two, they're now seeing firsthand what their kids are being taught. That's a threat to the left, is it not?
Well, it's a threat to anybody who wants to indoctrinate children in a particular point of view, and I think that's one reason why some people homeschool. But look, Tony, you know, homeschooling is a mainstream educational alternative. There are over 2.5 million children homeschooled every year. You know, I saw some tweets over the weekend about this article quoting from Professor Barthollet's Arizona Law Review journal article. And it's pretty amazing to me how many people have come out in defense of homeschooling. Experts, people like Senator Ted Cruz. There are literally dozens of articles in the last 3 days calling out this article and this professor's point of view as just being extreme. You know, her assertions about abuse and, you know, what homeschooling families are is unsubstantiated. It's not supported by the research. I mean, look, homeschooling is it's a fast-growing movement. It's a diversifying movement. You've got people on the left, on the right, who are homeschooling for many reasons. They have children with special needs. They want their children to be able to pursue their own interests. They're not happy with the state of the public schools, and content is just one of those things that people are not happy about in the schools.
Well, yeah, right. It's been growing, originally associated most predominantly with people of faith who were concerned about the indoctrination of their children. That still is a large percentage. And of course, she takes issue with that, saying that it's depriving children of being taught the principles of democracy and community values, i.e. indoctrination. That, I mean, look, I see this as the left, as they lose control of children leaving the public school system. And as you pointed out, that's growing in number, many for security reasons, some for curriculum, some for religious reasons. And I think others will be exposed to the concept through what we're experiencing right now with children being out of school and being at home. I think parents may actually, some parents, hopefully, will actually enjoy the interaction they have with their children.
But we're actually seeing that, Tony. In fact, that's one of the reasons why HSLDA has launched a brand new website called mompossible.org. You know, now millions and millions of children are at home. We call them suddenly schooling at home. And, you know, there's quite a spectrum of reaction around the country for school districts. Some are throwing up their hands, places like Michigan, and just saying, look, as Governor Whitmer said, we're just going to suspend all in-person instruction. And they even did so for non-public schools, which one questions whether she even has the authority to do that. But she did. Some places, some states are saying, well, we're not going to stop instructing. We're just going to move everything online. And so, or we're going to email you worksheets. And so you've got this spectrum where some parents are like trying to figure out what to do with their kids. They've been given total freedom, but they've never had it before. And they're trying to figure out what to do. And they're also trying to work during this coronavirus pandemic. On the other side, you've got parents who are being demanded by schools to basically become teachers, and they're frustrated by that, and they're having to work from home, and they have two or three kids, they've got three or four teachers for each of the kids emailing them, and they're having to check in, and so it's very frustrating for people. And so our website, mompossible.org, is a resource for people to kind of help them cope a little bit and try to get a handle on what's happening and the stresses that everybody is experiencing. And as you pointed out, you know, crisis schooling or corona schooling or whatever you want to call it is very different from the kind of homeschooling that you've done and I do with my family with seven children. You know, the hallmark of kind of your typical homeschooling is freedom from rigid schedules, flexibility right. for kids to follow their interests and different, you know, kinds of things. And as you pointed out, to kind of enjoy the relationship of being in a family.
Yeah. And I think some parents will all of a sudden discover, wait a minute, it doesn't take the kids that long to get their lessons done. Why are they spending so much time at school and they're able to get through this in such a quick period of time? Now, I do understand it's apples and oranges comparison because you work at your own pace and you tailor the education of your children to your children. And there are so many resources available out there today. I just think that, again, parents who, I mean, we have children for a reason. God gives them to parents. It doesn't give them to the public schools or to the government. But if we rediscover that relationship and all of a sudden we realize what we're missing by shipping our kids off to school, I just think we could possibly, Mike, I just think you could see an explosion in homeschooling even further than what we've seen in the last two decades.
I think you're right, Tony. I think a lot of people a year from now are going to look back on this coronavirus pandemic and they're going to point to this as kind of a time when they realize that, you know, homeschooling is something we could do and we really like it. We like having our kids at home. We like this relationship. We realize that, you know, our kids can actually have time to play, especially for the younger kids. You know, kids need that kind of unstructured playtime. The older kids can have the flexibility to explore, you know, areas of interest that they're interested in and talented at. And every child is unique. And, you know, you and I both believe that each person has a plan and a purpose from God for their lives. And homeschooling allows families, whether they believe in God or not, to allow their children to explore those kinds of pathways. We're seeing interest. We're seeing a lot of Facebook posts, a lot of social media posts of parents who are saying exactly what you just said, which is, you know, this isn't so bad. And, you know, we do get the schoolwork done in 2 or 3 hours, and then they, you know, we can go on walks and we can play outside. And, you know, we're hearing about parents, about kids who are, you know, checking in with their school teachers online, even during the online school, and saying, yeah, over the weekend, my dad taught me how to change the oil in my car and I cooked with my mom. And I think there's a lot of really positive things happening, even though, you know, it's a very challenging time for a lot of people economically.
The only caveat, Mike, and I think you would agree, having homeschooled your kids, and this comes from my wife, who's done the bulk of the educating of our five children, one still in the pipeline. You take it one semester at a time, you know, because you're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days, and you just got to. But I will tell you, looking back on it from a standpoint of having four that we've educated at home, that are who some are off now in college, some are off now successful careers, is that we never regret doing that because of the relationships that were built with the kids, the open communication, and just the it's kind of hard to explain, but it is really good. And when you get to the point where you've actually launched them out successfully into their own careers, and you continue to have those ongoing conversations and relationships that really have their root, they're rooted in the fact that they were taught by mom at home.
Well, and it is mostly moms who do it. We know there's some dads out there also pitching in and doing their job and helping out in various situations. But what I'd like people to know, Tony, is, you know, what the research shows is that homeschooling works. You know, there's a lot of research, and that's why Elizabeth Barthollet's article is so extreme, and really it's absurd because it's not based on the facts. If they had really looked at the facts, they would not have come to those conclusions. But the facts show is that, you know, homeschool kids do at least as well, and in a lot of research shows that they do better academically, they do fine socially, they grow up, they join the military, they have jobs, careers, families. They're just like regular Americans, except that they were taught at home by mom, and they're feeling very fulfilled, many of them. In fact, some research has shown that over 85-90% of people who were homeschooled and graduated from homeschooling plan to homeschool their own kids and actually had a very good experience.
Right.
So, you know, if people are thinking right now, can I do this? The answer is you can do it. You can keep doing it as well. That's why we put out this Mom Possible website, lots of videos and resources that people can go and get some encouragement and some direction from. But I hope people will, as you said, look back on this time and say, you know, that wasn't so bad. Maybe we should keep doing this.
Well, we hope they will, and we will point them to the website of Homeschool Legal Defense Association so they can make use of all the great resources you have. Mike, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, Tony, thank you very much. We appreciate the work that you do in FRC, such an important contribution to our culture and to society, and I'd encourage folks to come over and check out mompossible.org.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike. Hope a lot of people use those resources as they discover this thing called schooling at home. Well, I'm going to continue our conversation with one of our experts in-house, a senior fellow and director of human dignity at the Family Research Council, Kathy Roos. Kathy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony.
You know, I know you've looked at this from Professor Bartholet in the basically attack on homeschooling, saying that the children are vulnerable, they're at risk at home. And I think, wow, she obviously has a look at the statistics out of the public school system where, you know, estimates are one out of every 10 children are abused in the public school system. I mean, this is just another gratuitous attack on, I think, on parents and the idea that, you know, they're pushing the idea that the state knows better than parents how to raise children.
That's absolutely what it is, Tony. I mean, increasingly, people with this philosophy think of and come out and say that public schools are supposed to be agents of social change rather than schools being the agents of parents to support, right, in cooperation with parents, their fundamental right to direct the upbringing and education of their kids. It is... you know, the person who wrote this article, you know, this is in Harvard Magazine. They must have neglected to do a little research to find out that Harvard itself in 2017, the dean of freshmen, said that we've had lots of success with homeschoolers. So Harvard as an institution seems really to embrace and seek out homeschoolers and certainly praises the homeschoolers that they've had. So this was, this Harvard Magazine article really was pushing this radical professor Bartholet's theories, where she calls parents authoritarians and worries for the vulnerable, helpless children who are subject to those authoritarians for 24 hours a day. It's very condescending and terribly offensive. And I am hoping that readers of this magazine article will be offended. I mean, that many people will be offended reading this.
Well,
whether you homeschool or not.
I want to go back to a point you just said about their defense of public education is values. It is this community, you know, understanding. I thought we sent our kids to school to learn so that they could be productive in the workforce and carry the republic into the next generation.
Right, right. And the word values is really, really important because there was a time when there were, that I think we could say that we had, that the culture had shared values and that a public school, the values promoted by a public school would be shared values. But we are not there anymore. And this article highlights, goes on to talk about the government's right to raise children with a certain type of community values, social values, democratic values. This, the author is quoting Bartholet. But we just don't have those shared values anymore to a large extent. And who has the right to raise children with a certain value system? Well, of course it's the parents. But right. But there's a segment of the professional educational lobby who doesn't like that at all and is trying to put itself between parents and their children and to instill what they think are their elitist education-driven values. But, you know, you look at the NEA, Tony, and you see what the values are. And they are not in step at all. I mean, they are hostile to values that Christian families hold. So it really is a competing, it's a competition whose values are going to be instilled into children. And the winners have to be the parents. The parents' values have to be the ones that prevail. And that's why this coronavirus situation is giving parents, I think, a real opportunity to look at education differently and to enjoy being with their kids and to see the strength of homeschooling.
And see what their kids are being taught.
Well, exactly. See what their kids are being taught and see what they think about that.
Kathy, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. Kathy Roos here at the Family Research Council. Folks, thanks so much for joining us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.